All right. Good morning, Minister. Let's try this again.
Keep selling it.
Child, Youth and Family Services.
Good morning. Derek Bennett,
MHA, Dulcesport, Twillingate District, and Parliament Secretary.
Good morning. I'm Rochelle Cochran. I'm Deputy Minister of CYFS.
Good morning. I'm Rick Healy. I'm the Assistant Deputy Minister with Policy and Programs at CYFS.
Good morning. I'm Melanie O'Neill, Director of Communications.
Good morning. Christine Osmond, Director of Adoptions.
Oh, hi. Paul Grandy, Departmental Controller.
Oh, Kelly White, EA, to the Minister.
Susan Pereira, Manager, Human Resources.
Good morning. I'm Steve French, Manager of Budgeting.
David Brazel, MHA, Conception Bay East, Belle Island.
Veronica Hayden, Executive Assistant to Paul Davis. I'm Jerry Rogers, and I work for the Good People of St. John's Center. And Susan Williams is a researcher with our caucus. She just had to step out to get her something.
Scott Reed, MHA, St. George's Humber.
Neil King, MHA for the Historic District of Bonavista, Vista, and I'm filling in for Carol Ann Halley.
Mark Brown, MHA, Placentia West Bellevue, and Parliamentary Assistant to the Premier, filling in for Ms. Parsley from Harbour, Maine.
And continuing on subbing, we also have the Honourable Member for Conception Bay East, Belle Island, replacing the Honourable Member for Fortune Bay, Cape Lahoon. This morning.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Good. Okay. All right. So we'll have the Minister open with a few words, and then we'll start with Mr. Brazel.
Good morning. Thank you all for being here this morning to participate in the estimates for the Department of Child, Youth and Family Services. Through Budget 2016-17, our government is reiterating its commitment to ensuring the protection and well-being of our province's most vulnerable children and youth. We are continuing to move forward with a focus on further enhancing child and youth care through the provision and development of programs, policies, standards, and services, and with an investment of approximately $150 million for child protection. We also remain committed to the approved organizational structure of 1-to-20 ratios and team structures. The Department's organizational model for service delivery provides our frontline team with one supervisor for a team of every six social workers, one social worker for every 20 cases, one social work assistant for every team, one clerical for every team. We have made every effort to maintain our frontline services as we navigate through these difficult financial times. That is why we have chosen to amalgamate some child, youth, and family services sites where there will be no impact of our staffing model on client services. As of March 31, 2016, there was a total of 52 offices. And after closures and consolidation in the coming months, we will have a total of 47 offices located throughout the province. It is our belief that through this amalgamation, we will be able to further enhance effectiveness of child protection services by strengthening our teams for case management. Currently, there are a total of 554 frontline positions, of which 89, 12%, are vacant, with no incumbent. Our department continues its ongoing recruitment to fill these vacancies on a temporary and permanent basis. Just last month, April, we posted a new ad for the 2016 social workers eligibility list on the Government of Newfoundland Labrador's job portal. Our recruitment efforts for Labrador continue to be very challenging, but we remain focused in our efforts to fill vacancies and improve caseloads in this region. As the Department of Child, Youth and Family Services continues to succeed in laying a strong foundation to address the systemic issues in child protection services in our province, it is important to understand the context in which these services are delivered. While our province's population continues to decline, the number of children entering into care is actually on the rise. At this point, we have approximately 1,000 children in our care, with another approximately 5,000 children involved with the Department's protective intervention services. The Department has made significant progress since it was created in 2009, and some of our most recent successes that we are especially pleased with include the development and implementation of 12 new provincial policies and procedures for the protective intervention program, which include a range of policy areas such as childcare, behavioral aid, and transportation. the establishment of two new pilot projects, Waypoints Foster Family Support Pilot Project, which is a partnership between Child, Youth and Family Services, the Newfoundland and Labrador Foster Families Association, and Waypoints. Through this project, Waypoints works with participating foster parents in their homes and communicates and communities to provide wraparound services. Specialized Family-Based Care Pilot Project, which is a partnership between Child, Youth and Family Services and Key Assets. Through this project, Key Assets provides level 3 care and services to children and youth with complex needs. The signing of a new working relationship agreement between Child, Youth and Family Services and the Sheshashe and Mushwa First Nations. This agreement focuses on improving services, coordination, and information sharing as it pertains to the protection in the communities of Sheshashe and Netwashish. The ongoing work of the Nunatsiavut government to ensure more Level 4 placements are available in Labrador for Inuit children. Despite the difficult fiscal realities facing the province, Budget 2016-17 will continue to provide the necessary support so that the Department of Child, Youth and Family Services will be able to further enhance the services and care provided to our province's children, youth and their families. And now I'd like to take the opportunity to address any questions you may have.
Thank you, Minister. And I'll now ask the clerk to call the first subhead.
1.01.
Shall 1.1.01 carry? Mr. Brazel?
I have no questions on that section.
Okay. Well, we're going to, if it's okay with yourself and Ms. Rogers, we'll just work down through the ones, and then we'll call that inclusive at the end. So.
Sure. Okay. Yes, I'm into 1.2, so I'm good to go there?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Continue on through right there.
Okay, yeah. We'll go on right through. Under transportation and communications, I noticed from the large 96.4 that was originally budgeted to the revised 10, now budgeted this year for 30. Can you clarify a little bit what that will cover through transportation and communications, the difference from what was originally needed?
Okay, so budget 16-17 has decreased as a result of the detailed line-by-line expenditure review of drop balances over several years.
Even though we budgeted higher amounts, it was deemed that it wasn't necessary because of the expenditure last year. Fair enough.
So it was a review done over several years and it was deemed it wasn't necessary.
No, I understand. Purchase of services. 20,000 budgeted, 7,000 used. I know it's small amount, 13, but just curious to see what services there. This is more for my own information here, if I could, please.
Okay. So is advertising?
For which program, the whole department or the foster parents program?
No, that's the whole department, right? I'm the minister's assistant.
Mr. Brazel, could you tell
me
which...
Can you just state your name?
Oh, sorry. I'm Rochelle Cochran. Could you tell us which account number you're using?
Yes, Rochelle. Under 1.2.01, purchase services.
So could I ask just a point of clarification, Rochelle Cochran, again? Have we concluded with 1.1.01?
No, actually, what I'm doing, and I don't mean to confuse you, because we've done it a number of ways since we've been sharing, we're just going to... Mr. Brazel's time on the clock is going to work up to 1.2.04.
Okay. On the
next page. 1.2. Would you prefer if we just went subhead for subhead? Because when I look at the whole thing, we're not going to run out of time this morning, I don't think. I do this because I really want to be fair to both parties on the clock. But let's go back and stick with 1.1.01, and if you have no questions, I'll move to Ms. Rogers.
Yep, fair enough. That's a better way to do it.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Jerry Rogers. If we go back to 1.1.01. Thanks. Under transportation and communications, I know that David Brazel had already asked about this, but there was a drop from 15-16 budget revised by $26,000. Can you tell me what had been planned and what was not completed?
Yeah, what had been planned.
Rochelle Cochran. That budget line has been budgeted for much more substantive travel than we actually do. So, for example, you know, 5 trips to Labrador could result in those costs. On a historical basis, the minister's office traditionally makes 1 trip. So when we looked at our line by line, we've determined we haven't been spending that money, so it was prudent for us to reduce the budget.
Okay. Thank you. And under supplies, that's okay. We can pass through that. Purchase services, what you may have anticipated purchasing and decided not to?
Yeah, advertising, media monitoring, printing, meeting costs, entertainment, number of things like that.
Okay. Thank you. And 1.2.01.
No, we'll call that now. We established that. We'll go point for point.
Oh, and you're going to call each
yes.
little sub-one.
Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. Shall 1.1.01 carry? All those in favor?
Yay.
All those against? Carried.
Okay. 1.2.01.
1.2.01.
Okay. And also I want to say thank you very much for your time here this morning, and thank you for your incredible work. I know how difficult and complex the work in this particular department can be, but how so very, very vital. And I know how difficult it is under the particular financial circumstances that we find ourselves, the fiscal reality of the province, and which probably, more than likely, place extra strain on families around the province. So I want to thank you so very, very much for your passion and compassion, which is what is really needed in this kind of work. And thank you for being here this morning. Under General Administration, Executive Support, in Transportation and Communications, again, we see a big drop from the budgeted and revised amount in 15-16.
Okay, so Minister Gammon Walsh, the amount of travel to regions was lower again than anticipated. And department reduced discretionary spending.
Okay. So I wonder, again, with the particular fiscal realities that mm-hmm. we're seeing, also the fact that we see such an increase in the number of kids in care, when one would hope we'd see the actual opposite. You don't see a need for more travel to meet with in different regions to see what's going on?
So some of the work has been done online through links, and also since I've started, the Aboriginal population, they have come and met with us.
Okay.
So that has also happened.
Okay.
The Aboriginal governments.
Okay, because that's such a significant reduction.
And that was an evaluation over a number of years, and then the drop balances.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Professional services, what kinds of professional services had you anticipated in 15-16? And we see that none of that was spent, and now there's also a significant reduction.
Okay, so it would have been to hire outside expertise, consultants to advise and or assist with special projects which may arise from time to time.
The evaluation of the level 4 placements that's coming up now this year, would that come out of this budget?
It's completed.
It's
completed?
The evaluation
is completed. We've completed it.
Okay, and will that be made available?
It's Rochelle Cochran, CYFS. We have done the evaluation internally. Mm-hmm. We have had extensive discussions with each of our 4 service providers. We've required them to file an action plan on any deficiencies that were noted, and we have had regular monitoring done of that plan. So we're more than confident that the results of that evaluation have been addressed and that our new services going into 16-17 are as per our policy. In terms of making it public, we have asked, we sought advice from our legal counsel, and they have advised us that the evaluation will be not in keeping with our CYCP Act, and that we would be violating our own act if we made it public. So we've shared it with the Child and Youth Advocate, and she has been involved with our meetings with our service providers, And she is I can't speak for her. I shouldn't go that far. But she, I could go as far as to say she has been very pleased with the process and how we've addressed all the issues that have been identified.
And, Rochelle, can you tell us who did the evaluation?
It was done by our fabulous policy and research folks within the department. Okay. The work that's required on this evaluation involves a fairly extensive assessment of whether or not the service providers were in meeting with our 87 policies that are under child protection. So in order to do that evaluation, we required expertise in social work and those who had 20-plus years of experience. So to reach out into the professional community, we were of the opinion that we had the experts in our department upon which this review could be done most efficiently to respond to the needs of our children that are in our in-care program.
Okay, thank you. Can you tell us what some of the sort of key concerns may have been?
The number one key concern was related to the turnover of staffing. Our kids require we would like to see more stable staffing model, and that issue did come up, and each provider has filed a plan upon which they're going to improve their HR practices to ensure that stability. So we were quite satisfied with the responses and with the outcomes.
And what about the issue of training and of staff?
Minister, do you want me to continue? Sorry. It's Rochelle Coffrin again. Yes, we were certainly pleased with some of our findings with respect to the training. And again, we have asked where there were deficiencies. We've asked the providers to, in the plan that they filed with us, to remedy any areas. Training was part of that plan, and they're on that as we speak.
Great. And how is the oversight of how the homes are operated? How is that done?
Again, it's Rochelle Cochran. Our social workers visit the homes and the children in those homes monthly. They come back and they discuss. This is a regular business for us. It's part of our operation. They come back and they meet with the clinical program supervisor and the zone manager, and they determine if there's any, what actions are necessary. In addition, our corporate services, Rick Healy's branch, they're involved with a daily contact with the service providers from a corporate perspective, again, for the HR issues, for the financial administration, to ensure that those homes are operating according to provincial law. So we have it coming from the front line on a monthly basis and regular reporting, and then we have it as well from corporate office.
Okay, thank you very much. Purchase services, we see that there was a budgeted in 15-16 of $20,000, and the $7,000 was spent. What kinds of purchase services would those include?
Okay, that was primarily for advertising and meeting room rentals, some printing, photocopier lease costs, repairs, maintenance of equipment.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
I also want to add that I'm very confident with the level 4 evaluation that has occurred, and as the minister, I must say there's been some fantastic advancement in the last couple of months.
Okay, great. In terms of improvements and...
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Because I know there were some... challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we still have the same number of houses in the same communities?
It's Rochelle Cochran again. Depending on the demand, wherever the children are, that's where we intend to provide housing and supports for those children. So from time to time, one may close, it's just regular business, but others may open. Historically, in Metro is our kind of our growth area, St. John's. I shouldn't say our growth area, it's not a great word.
Increased,
yes, let's call it that. You know, that's where our greatest demand is, and that's where we may move, not move the child, but we may open a home in a different area of St. John's or close in another area. So it is a very... movable target, depends on the needs of the child.
So what's happening? Why are we having an increase in the number of kids going into care? Do we have a handle on that?
That is a million-dollar question. We have had experts here from away who are doing our structured decision-making model, and we have asked them for some advice on that. And that is a complex issue. It's so vast, it's very challenging to be able to give you a definite answer. So to say that we actually know for sure with a great degree of certainty, that's not something I can answer today.
What about those some inklings? Like there, you must have some sense of what may be some of the contributing factors.
From our front line, we've heard concern with increased use of drug and alcohol abuse, and that, of course, creates a certain degree of volatility within families. And that's what our front line have told us now. There's,
again, so in the families or with the kids or both?
Oh, in the families, with the parents, yes.
Okay. That's tough. And anything else? Any other? In terms of what's... Why?
You know, we continue to have a challenge again with you know, some of our really remote communities, and that is certainly some work that we have underway. The minister mentioned a few things we're doing with the Aboriginal governments, and we're quite proud of the advancements we've made in that area and our improvements in our relationships with the Aboriginal governments and our goal to try to maintain the children in their communities. That is going to take us quite a bit of time because we're actually trying to build capacity in Labrador, capacity that hasn't existed ever. So, and we want to maintain the standard of care for our children as other children in the province receive. But I must say the work that's being done with the Aboriginal governments through our Inuit Roundtable and with the Inuit government is quite extensive and it's very positive.
Mm-hmm. Well, and with the issue of increased drug and alcohol use in families, I imagine then one of the problems is accessing help for families, whether it be rehabilitation or prevention or...
Well, we haven't heard that access is a challenge from our perspective. I mean, once our family care action plans go in effect, then the remediation occurs with the family and the members who need it. So I can't say that we've seen a wait list issue. That's not something I've heard from our front line, that our families or the parents of the children that we have in care are waiting on wait lists. I haven't heard that, but we just know that there is an increased, or that's what the staff are advising is the number one issue is increased use of substance abuse.
Then we have to figure out why that's happening. Okay, thanks.
If I could, Minister, could I just continue on? I've asked that question many times with our regional directors and our management team, and they're, you know, it's income levels affect that as well. So they're seeing, you know, our whole way we live is people who are mobile, flying in and out, things like that, are leading to a bunch of new social problems that we as a province historically haven't had a lot of experience with. So in some of our rural regions, they have said that some of that fly-in, fly-out that we've seen historically into Alberta. So we're not sure where the trend is going to take us in the out years, but I can promise you it is an active discussion with our management team all the time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Is that it for you, Ms. Rogers, on 1.2.01?
It is. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Brazel didn't have anything else on that. Okay, so we'll call
that
one.
We're on that section.
Shall 1.2.01 carry? All those in favor?
Yeah.
All those against? Carry. Now, it's just time is pretty much eight, so I'll go back to Mr. Brazel on the clock. Okay, I'll ask the clerk to call the next subhit.
1.2.02.
Shall 1.2.02 carry? Mr. Brazel?
Under salaries, corporate services there, just curious to see the major decrease from what was budgeted to what was revised to now what's being put as the estimates for this year. And I know you'd mentioned, Minister, and I can appreciate the challenges of recruiting staff, particularly in some of the remote places. Can you explain exactly the difference there in the salary base?
There were 60 PCNs, that's 38 permanent and 22 temporary in corporate services. There was 8 in the area for the ISM project, and we no longer needed those positions as that project progresses, so that has decreased.
So those positions, have they been encompassed the service they provided? in another way. I know the project completed as such.
The OCIO is managing that project for us on our behalf because it's a major IT system. That's kind of not where our expertise is. So those positions are no longer with CYFS, and OCIO is funding them. So it's really a wash for
transfer,
us.
Yeah.
It's in and out for us. It's all a wash. It's over with OCIO.
Yeah. Has there been any other decrease in actual salary units that are directly linked to providing the services of Child, Youth and Family Services?
No.
On the ground itself, and I do know there's other headings that we'll get into later.
No, definitely not.
Okay,
no.
Fair enough. Then. That clarifies that. If I can have your indulgence, I just want to ask a couple of general questions, and I'm trying to stay away from direct policy-oriented ones, but there's some that will clarify some of the other line programs here. The foster child program, has funding decreased in that program? Sure.
No.
So we're steady line on that. Okay, great. The enhanced youth program itself, allowances for youth remain and receive services, is that any funding cuts to those?
No.
Okay. So has there been no cuts to direct service delivery?
That's right, okay. No cuts. That's
good to hear, and that's one of the things I wanted to have in that
yes.
way.
No frontline cuts.
Yep, perfect, okay. Under the corporate services, transportation and communications, down from originally budgeted, but up somewhat from the revised. Just clarify some of the thoughts around that. Is it
so
the travel?
Continuing to use technology, using Microsoft Links to reduce travel expenditure, and a decrease as a result of the line-by-line expenditure review.
Okay.
Primarily, so we've been using Links a fair bit with our managers.
Okay. Great. I do have another general concept question just for clarification. The mentoring program in Sheshashe, is that still continuing?
It's Rochelle Cochran here. The program is still in place, if I can say. We haven't had the success with that program as we had hoped. So what we've done is we put I think it's a clinical program supervisor, a position. So we've taken it from a direct mentoring role, and we put a supervisor who is now in Happy Valley, and they mentor all of Labrador. So we wanted to get the maximum use of that program. They are still doing some work in Sheshashe, but it's not the same direct mentoring. It's more broader than that. It's right throughout Labrador. So we're hoping to try with that. We'll have better success.
Any idea of what some of the challenges are? I know there's some unique challenges in Labrador, obviously, but...
It's Rochelle Cochran. Our greatest challenge in Labrador is retention of staff. As soon as we put them in within a year or two, it's difficult for us to keep them there.
No, and yeah, I can understand that challenge as somebody who worked in Cheshire in a previous life, so there are some challenges here. Madam Chair, I'm good on that section 1.2.02.
Okay, are you okay if we move to Ms. Rogers?
Yep, sure.
On that section?
Right.
Thank you. Ms. Rogers?
Yes, I have no further questions here. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll call that subhead. Shall 1.2.02 carry? All those in favor?
Yay.
All those against? Carry.
1.2.03.
Shall 1.2.03 carry? So do you want to finish your time on the clock? Yeah?
Three. Under salaries, from 1.9 that was budgeted to 1.572 to 1.584. Can you tell me the difference? I know there's not a big difference from the revised to estimates for this year, but going back, you know, nearly $350,000, are there some salaries we don't need, we can't fill? Are they still on the books?
Minister Gavin Walsh. Vacancies, delays in filling positions, and I'll give you some examples. Vacancies during the year included 4 program and policy development specialists, 1 clerk typist, and 1 social worker. We had a long-term vacancy.
And I do realize, and you've mentioned it, and I can appreciate it, challenges are in rural Newfoundland being able to fill those positions. Is there any thought process or any new creative way of trying to recruit? I mean, you know, I know years ago there would be additional incentives depending on where you were. There was incentives out of the School of Social Work as part of that. Have we been talking to the school to talk about how we approach that?
There is additional incentives in place. We just cannot keep the social workers in Labrador.
So everything's still in place.
Turnover is really large.
Out of curiosity, and I would hope somebody would know it, the number of social workers that graduates these days, are they in line with what they were for the last number of years?
It's Michelle Conklin, there has been no change in our ability to access social workers. Obviously, our faculty social workers are our number one source of recruitment, and we get them from many other provinces as well, which is a good thing for us. So we have broad-based social workers. It's not the issue of supply. It's the issue of whether or not they want to remain in those communities long term. We have provided all the benefits, the northern allowances, the travel. We even provide housing. There's not one benefit that's in the toolbox that's not we don't use in Labrador. And I guess recruitment's not a problem in all our communities in Labrador, but there are some pockets, some different communities that causes us considerable challenge for recruitment. We have engaged the Aboriginal Governments Minister on the recruitment, and they're working with us constantly to try to get, if there's Aboriginal people who are of Aboriginal descent, if we could get them hired, we absolutely do.
Exactly. No, makes sense. Again, just out of clarification, are the graduates leaving the province? Are they going into the private sector? I mean, keeping in mind social work is a very, oriented specific skill set.
It's Rochelle Cochran again. We've met with the Association of Social Workers on that issue, and we are the number two recruiter of social workers. The health boards are the number one. So there's still a fair bit of work, we understand, for social workers in Newfoundland, and we're number two. So we were pretty pleased with that. So we meet with the association as well on a regular basis just to collaborate and see if there's ways that we can enhance our recruitment in Labrador.
Perfect. Thank you. Transportation and communications, I've noticed, from what was budgeted, 141.3, 24, obviously, and that may be relevant to the fact having less social workers in the field, the 47. But I do, have a concern, particularly some of these remote areas, of getting people there to assess exactly how you better address some of the particular needs with the social workers. Your assessment on that's enough to cover what you anticipate?
Yes, again, it was the continued use of technology has proved to be very successful. And so that's the mode we have been using a fair bit. So I'm satisfied that these numbers will meet our needs.
Okay, fair enough. Under professional services, clarify the 442, which was substantial amount, to 29.4, then to 49.8. What the variance there, please?
So the professional service budget was primarily for the completion of the structured decision-making project. And other consultants' contracts, no expenditure related to SDM in 2015-16. Since SDM implementation is delayed, we're waiting on the development of the ISM. So it's all technology, and it's one of the recommendations that we're trying to put in place.
Okay, fair enough. Another general one, if you could add. The fly-in, fly-out process, is that still in the budget? Still in the same rate of support?
Go ahead. Here again, sorry. We use that program. That is our number one tool right now of getting full-time social workers in the region. It is very expensive, but it's the number one tool, and we will continue to use it to service those communities. We have our supervisors on a fly-in, fly-out, and we have our social workers on a fly-in, fly-out.
Sure enough. I'm glad to see that still exists because I see it as a tool for being able to attract and retain. Madam Chair, I'm good on 1.2.03.
Okay, so I'll move to Ms. Rogers on 1.2.03.
I'm fine with that.
You're fine? Okay, we'll call that.
1.2.03.
Shall 1.2.03 carry? All those in favor? Yay. All those against? Carried.
1.2.04.
Shall 1.2.04 carry? So
Clarification there, and it may answer both of our questions for Jerry also. The operating properties, furnishing equipment, what are we talking about in that one purchase there?
Side by sides.
Yeah, I thought so. I'm good on that section.
Ms. Rogers, did you have anything on 1.2.04?
I just have actually some general questions, but I'm fine with the actual numbers there. Will there still be a review of the Act, including the youth services, this year?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There will still be a review. It's actually has to be started by June, and we are started.
Great. Oh, so it's already started?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Is the department reviewing home intervention services to determine additional supports to keep children in the home, such as more counseling for parent coaching, financial support?
It's Michelle Cochran again. And it's another thing we're pretty proud of. It's a great opportunity. So I'm going to push it now while I can. So our protective intervention program, we inherited policies that came from all the RHAs, regional health authorities, last year, and this took us about 6 months. We reviewed with our frontline policies in every region, and we developed provincial policies that would be that would help standardize our practices, including our counseling for families, our drug addiction things that we help with all the time to help families be better families. Those programs were finalized, I would think, within the last 4 or 5 months, and so we have standard policies. Our frontline have been trained, and our supervisors are actively encouraging the use of those programs. We have not cut any of the funding for that protective intervention program.
Okay. So we know that there's been an increase in the number of kids coming into care. So what's the plan to address that?
It's Rochelle Cochran again. We released on our website Minister's Transition Book this year, and on our website you will see that it's noted as a very serious problem for us. During our ledge review that Minister mentioned that is coming up, we flagged that as our number one concern, and we will be asking all our stakeholders, and we have reached out to I apologize, I can't recall the name. Anyways, sometime in May, there's a group in the province who come to us, and they said, if we had to help you with anything, what could it be? And we said, could you please help us with the increase in our children coming into care? We think it's a huge problem. The government wants to deal with this issue. And they are having a symposium towards the end of May, and we're presenting. And it's all about the number of kids in care and what we as a province, sort of community, can do to help advance that. CYFS can't deal with that issue on its own. This is a whole social issue for all this province. So, and they're taking this on. So we're hopeful if we put all community, and I mean all police forces, everybody will be invited to this symposium. And at least we'll start to at least have a public discussion as to the ways we can help to change that number.
I had a great school. I have a great junior high school in St. John's Center called Holy Cross Junior High, which has just been slated to close now. And it's very interesting because there are about 108 students there right now, but that's because the feeder system has changed, which diminishes the population of the kids in that school. 38% of those kids have exceptionalities. Those kids walk to school, and it's been really interesting to see how their marks have increased and gotten better over the past few years with some of the extra programs that the school is doing by involving the community, by volunteer work from teachers, whether they have a basketball program that anybody can play basketball. So these kids walk to school, they have after school tutoring, they have leadership programs. Now they're all going to be bused to a different school. A lot of these kids come from very economically challenged families, extremely economically challenged families. And they're going to a school where there's, in the English stream, there is a high number of exceptionalities. They're going to Brother Rice, whereas in the French stream in Brother Rice, they don't have the same level of exceptionalities. Some of these kids are late for school, but then the teachers and the principal can call home and the kids can get to school. These kids miss the bus in the morning, they're not going to get to school that day. And I would hope that maybe in your symposium and the research that you do, that you look at the impact on the children's lives of schools. And whether, and again, any kind of after-school program these kids won't be able to go to because they have to get on the bus and go home. And a lot of their families don't have cars. So I would hope then that some of those factors are explored. These kids had a great breakfast program and a great lunch program. And I believe that this move will impact truancy, the kids' confidence, their exposure to all kinds of support systems. So I would think that what that school was able to do would prevent some problems that, you know, and we know how volatile that time is in a children's life, particularly if there are problems at home. We see that there was a real problem in adoptions, in the backlog of adoptions as well, that there was a commitment to have assessments done over a certain period of time. Can someone please address what was happening there in adoptions?
We asked Christine Osman. She's our director of adoptions. She's with us today. She'll speak to what we've done on the adoptions program.
Hi, yes, this is Christine Osman speaking, and we have certainly been working very closely from provincial office with the regional teams who are responsible for the assessment work. And Don O'Brien, who's the Assistant Deputy Minister, she isn't here today, but she's working very closely with our RDs and our managers and tracking very closely some of those child profiles that need to be completed in order for children to be matched with prospective adoptive families, and also working, putting a real push on getting assessments completed for families who have applied to adopt. But I would also like to add, I mean, we, you know, of course, we're very challenged in many areas in child welfare, and another place we are challenged is finding families who, of course, will, you know, be able to adopt some of our, what we would consider kind of harder to place children. It's quite challenging. They're older, there's larger sibling groups, very, you know, complicated decisions in regards to, you know, like when children had to leave communities, or, you know, do you separate siblings, which we try never to do unless there's some sort of an extraordinary circumstance. Right. But as you mentioned, Ms. Rogers, you know, some of the challenges these children face can be quite extensive too, and just trying to find families to match is one of our ongoing pieces of work as well.
And Christine, can you talk to me a little bit about the backlog in child profiles? Because it seems from the report of the department that the backup was considerable in terms of, I can't remember what was the expected time to have a profile completed and what was actually happening. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
It's always intended that, I mean, your quickest time frame once a child is actually available. So first of all, you have to have a child who's legally available for adoption. And just because they're in care, as you know, doesn't necessarily mean they're available. So we have to have a continuous custody on a child before that could happen. So then you move through the court process on that one. And then is the actual planning for the child in regards to looking at the full child's circumstances and getting all their information together. So the social workers, I mean, have been very much tasked with getting these, you know, adoption profiles completed in the most timely of fashions, particularly for younger children in regards to where, you know, they aren't going to be staying in their placements. We work very hard with our foster parents, who've been a fabulous resource for us. You know, they do a lot of, particularly of our older child adoptions and our, you know, children with more complex needs. So they've been fabulous. So every success we kind of have in foster care also often, you know, helps the adoptions program. And we've been, you know, quite good with our adoption subsidy program in trying to support foster families to be able to move towards the legal relationship with children and keeping all their resources in place as well. So, you know, I think there's, you know, a real, you know, conversation that occurs in this department in regards to knowing the impermanency that has to happen for these children and recognizing their attachments, their relationships, and their age. So it's, you know, the work is quite intensive.
Yeah. Is there a staff shortage issue for doing that work?
Not that I'm aware of. That hasn't been raised. I mean, okay. Of course, it's busy times on all the caseloads.
Yeah.
You know, so we certainly, you know, task social workers with trying to be able to prioritize and order their work and respond to it as they can, yes.
Okay, thank you. The wonderful ratios that everyone's working towards in terms of a social worker with 20 cases, a team led by six social workers, and a clinical program supervisor, how are all those ratios doing? How are we?
This is Minister Gammon-Walsh. We're maintaining the ratios pretty good. Of course, it's very fluid as, you know, the cases go up and the cases come down. And by moving and closing child, youth, and family services offices, we're not affecting the ratios. The place that we have the biggest issue with ratios, again, is Labrador. And, of course, that's simply because we can't keep social workers in Labrador. And you know, it's difficult to maintain the 1 to 20 in Labrador.
Okay, but in terms of the six social worker and a supervisor team, that's good?
Yes, that's good.
Management specialists,
mm-hmm.
life skill coordinators, all that's good?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I have run into a situation with some of my constituents about the issue of whether files are open or closed or gone. Like, it seems that it's easier to get your pardon from convictions for major crimes than it is to have a file closed from CYFS. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
And right after How's that this, doing? Ms. Rogerson, we'll move back.
Sure, great. Thank you.
We're very cautious in closing the files, and that's probably just thorough assessments done prior to, and it does take time.
Mm-hmm. But I guess that the issue that, for instance, I've had with a few constituents is that if a grandmother is taking care of a grandchild and there's been no problem with that grandmother, but there's a file open because that grandmom is taking care of a child, and then she goes to apply for a job where she needs a clearance, mm-hmm. and it just flags and saying, yes, there's a file.
Certainly a mom would not flag on a clearance because she has a grandma, because she has she's taking care of her grandchild. Okay. The flag, I can only speak from policy,
right.
The flags that are on files are if people have previous history with CYFS, not if you're a foster parent or a grandma who's taking care of a child. The flags are related to whether or not it's called our Child Protection Records Check Program, and that's used quite extensively, maybe 1,200 to 1,500 per year.
Yeah.
And CYFS requires it, as we require it from all our service providers, that everyone have a clearance before they work with children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the flags. People call them flags, but it's a clearance certificate saying that you've had no previous issue related to child protection in order to work with children.
Okay. So we have an increase of I'll come back to this. Thank you.
Thank you. So are you're finished specifically with 1.2.04?
Yes. Thank you.
So shall 1.2.04 carry? All those in favor? Those against, carried. So now we'll start with Mr. Brazel on 2.1.01.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For clarification on the $5.3 million decrease in salaries, is that attributed to the 12% vacancy we have with social workers?
Okay.
Hang on.
This one here. Yes, priority slippage. The reduction was a result of detailed line-by-line expenditure review taken by the budgeting division. So it was slippage primarily.
So that's a decrease in, obviously it's a decrease in budget, but is it a decrease in the number of positions that are available in the field?
No.
It's Rochelle Cochran here. We looked at our historical budget. When we went through this line-by-line review process with Treasury, we historically look back over how much have we spent over the last 4 or 5 years annually. We have a fair degree of churn in our caseload because of our social workers are fairly mobile. They're young, and they move from time to time. And we have other areas, particularly in Labrador, where it's hard to recruit. So we have found that we've had a little bit over $5 million on an annual basis that we haven't been spending in our salary budgets just because of our because of our churn in our caseload, and it is what it is. So the salary money that we have going into 16-17, the 44.8, we know that's what we've been spending over the last 4 or 5 years annually. So we don't expect there's going to be any change in our – there won't be any change in our front line because of that reduction.
And that's – even with that in case, you can still maintain your ratios without any challenges?
Absolutely.
Other than the recruitment challenges that are there?
That budget reflects our current staffing model of 1 in 20 and our 1 to 6 social workers.
Would you have the flexibility where you've given up some of the money there after reassessment if there's a deemed a need somewhere else to be able to recalculate bringing some of that back?
We have asked, it's Rochelle Cochran again, we've asked Treasury Board, and they've indicated that if we have any trouble in our salary budget or anything else for that matter, because our caseload is fluid, as you know, we've indicated our in-care caseload has been growing by about 50 children a year, and of course they're the most expensive model, and we have a commitment from Treasury Board that if we need that additional money, there is a reserve set aside for us, and we can get access to that money, and we are quite satisfied that we will get it if we need it.
Good. That's good to hear. question, knowing that, you know, one of the bigger expenses and overhead in that is, you know, children that we have to put in hotels and efficient units. And that. How many do we have in that in comparison to the numbers we have in our caseloads on a given day? And I know it fluctuates.
We have no hotels right now.
No. We don't have any hotels now. We're not using the hotel model.
Okay. And our whole foster parent program is still moving forward.
It's
still very successful. I mean, hats off. It's a good program. And mm-hmm. there seems to be a fair bit of uptake relevant to that. Under supplies, dramatic decrease from what was budgeted. What's not necessary now, or what's being covered that's not an issue?
Again, the department reduced discretionary spending where possible.
Okay, so it's a budget exercise.
It was a budget exercise, yeah. Yep.
And not expected to have any impact on the delivery services?
No, not at all.
Okay, good. Curious again, how many children are outside in care out of the province?
It's Rochelle Cochran again. That's the number we look at weekly, and it changes off on a frequency basis. On average, it's about 30 to 35 on a weekly basis, yeah. If I can recall, just from the charts I see. And it sometimes is up 2 and 3, and is down. It's just as they come home or as we send away. And sometimes we also have multiple children in a family who have to go to out-of-province treatment, and again, that could be 2 or 3 in any one family. So that's why the number deviates a couple from week to week.
Okay. So how successful have we been in you know, bringing some of the kids back to the province with the new programs and the new sites that we've put in place?
There is a case plan put around every child that returns. For example, on Friday, we had two workers who flew to Manitoba or Regina, to Manitoba. We are bringing back 4 children, and we have foster homes, or in some cases, grandparents are accepting children. So as they come back, we have a case plan for every child when they get discharged from an out-of-province treatment facility.
Okay. And when they're sent out of the province, is it because we can't find, you know, proper setting here, or is there some special needs that these individuals may have that we can't provide right now?
It's Rochelle Cochran again. It's historically special needs, and it's been determined that there are the needs of that child can be best addressed in that treatment facility outside the province.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I just wondered, and it's more policy, and I do understand it's been challenged, the child and youth advocate, obviously, you know, critical incidents. So there's still a good working relationship with the advocate's office to ensure that reports are done in a timely fashion within the time frames.
Minister Gamble Walsh. Yes, we are moving ahead on the reporting of critical incidents and deaths, and there's a fair bit of work been done. As you know, I mean, there's 6 years of work done on it prior to us taking the file over in December. So it is moving ahead.
Okay, good. I'm good on that section, Madam Chair.
Okay. To Ms. Rogers on 2.1.01.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't remember now if all the offices that are closing, have all those locations been announced?
If I could, it's Rochelle Cochran again. In 15-16, we closed 3 offices, Piccadilly, Stephenville Crossing, and Burgio. And in 16-17, we're closing Gambo and Fort right. Saunders. For us as a department, operationally, if I can say, I have to use that word, because we closed in 15-16, and then we've closed a few more in 16-17. Operationally, we are trying to maintain offices whereby we can keep a caseload of social workers 1 in 20 and a supervisor ratio of 1 in 6. We think that is the best model for decision-making for the children that need to come into care. From time to time, we have offices. Caseloads are falling in some communities as the population is aging and it's becoming more regionalized or urbanized, if I can say that. As the permanent administrators of the department, We always look at those ratios. It's a regular item. We have our manager of HR with us because she produces a report every week. So if we see historically that there are falls in our caseload, that we cannot maintain a sufficient caseload and professionalism that we need to maintain for the decisions that we make, we will be recommending further closures on an annual basis. But at this point in time, we are looking at other offices. We will always do that. If we find that there's not a sufficient caseload in an office, that would warrant keeping a full-time social worker, just one for money, but the other thing would be for clinical program decision-making. It needs a broader lens when we're making decisions on children.
Okay, thank you. Again, the issue of the increase of the number of kids coming into care or needing services is quite alarming, considering that I don't think our population growth is as high. So it's it is troubling. What's really happening? I've always found that the mandate of the department, which is right up front in all documents, is I always feel quite curious about it. The Child Youth Family Services is mandated to protect children and youth from maltreatment by their parents and support their healthy development and well-being through programs and services. And I've always found it to be such a negative way to position really what the department is and what it should be doing. I would think that the approach would be to support families, and that if there's a problem, then that's what would be dealt with as well. Just something that has always kind of stopped me when I've read that, and it's right up front in all the documentation about the department.
And Mr. Rogers, if I could, I guess part of our, I'll just address the increase in the number of kids coming into care. We've also heard from the front line that it's likely that our historical caseload may not be a strong enough indicator, because now with a ratio of 1 in 20, maybe our social workers are getting out and doing and identifying issues that probably may not have been in the past. Again, it's anecdotal, but we've heard that as well. You talk about the prevention. Our number one goal is to keep children with their families. Trust us. We don't want to take any child into care that doesn't need to come into care. It's very disturbing to us on a daily basis when we see that happening. That's why we put aggressive, and I mean, we were 6 months. We had a regional team. We had a provincial office team. There must have been 10 or 15 of us on a daily basis on our protective intervention policies. We wanted to standardize provincial policies so that every social worker was operating with the same tools. We now have that. And that became effective, I think, in January?
Yeah.
Fully operational as of January. So every social worker now has the same counseling tools, any drug prevention things that we need to give a family. Everyone now is aware of what the benefits are that we can give to every family. So we're hopeful. I mean, again, it's, you know, this is a this is not an exact science. This is not engineering. This is a very social science area. And so we're hoping that with the new protective intervention policies standardized right across the province, that we will start to help all our social workers provide better supports to the families.
Okay, thank you.
Add to that, Rick Healy.
We've also implemented in the coming weeks standardized policies and procedures for our intervention services model, which I think is kind of the area, one of the areas I think that you're going towards. It's basically providing hands-on support to families to provide support for families so that they can better deal with behavioral issues with their children, so that as opposed to the children coming out, we're going to be supporting the children in their family, give the parents the tools and the skills to better be able to deal with the challenges that they face. So those policies are going to be rolled out within the next couple of weeks. Another example of standardizing them right across the provinces.
And so there'll be an announcement of that, I'm sure. Was the department consulted vis-a-vis some of the extra financial stressors on families that the budget will present? Was your department consulted on what that impact might be on families, the extra stressors due to the levy, increased taxes, drops in some of the services?
It's Rochelle Cochran. We were we accessed all, and we were asked for feedback into all the government renewal initiative proposals, and we provided that feedback. We were quite engaged. We had the list, and they asked us to select which ones we want, and we did a review and provided comments to the respective departments.
And does the department have any concern about the extra financial stressors on families, particularly families low income, medium income?
It's Rochelle Cochran again. The increase in our caseload is not just happening last year or this year. Mm-hmm. It has been happening. Mm-hmm. And the question is why. It happened during a time of economic growth, mm-hmm. and we can't just say because of this it's going to affect our caseload. I was really disturbed, and everybody in our department and the ministers and previous ministers before them have been quite disturbed with the increase in our caseload, irrespective of the economy. Mm-hmm. So there are stressors out there within families, and we just need to, you know, and that will always exist, if I could say mm-hmm. it. No disrespect to those families, because I'm sure they, and like all families, work very hard to keep their children. We as a community, as a society in this province, we need to look at this broader. It's not just CYFS. It's not just a justice issue, and it's not just a mental health issue. It spans throughout the whole province.
Okay, thank you. Can we also have a breakdown by region of the number and ages of children and youth in kinship arrangements and in care?
Yeah, can we provide that?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Just provide the non-turtle numbers for privacy reasons. If I could, Ms. Rogers, for privacy reasons, we will give you that data by region where yep. there are numbers are greater than 5.
Okay. Okay. I can appreciate that. Yep. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that it for 2.1.01?
I just have one more question. Are there any new in-home supports being offered to help keep children in the home, for instance, extra transportation, respite work, behavior aid, child care, infant safety?
It's Rick Healy. As Rochelle mentioned, we did an extensive review of our protection programs and policies in the last 4 to 5 months. And not necessarily a new program, but certainly new policies, has been the intervention services. We're very proud of our intervention services. We feel this is going to be a direct service to go into the home to help our families on protective intervention. And while the Department of Health has had that program for quite some time, it's a relatively new program to CYFS, and we're really optimistic that this is going to provide some real strength and support to families on protection and intervention.
And that's the new policies and that you're going to be rolling out in a few weeks?
Yeah, within probably the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Perfect. Great. Oh. Thank you very much.
Okay. So any further questions on 2.1.01 that I'll need to come back to for Ms. Rogers, or shall we call that now? You're okay. Mr. Reed? Just one moment. Now, do we need to come back to that section for you, Ms. Rogers? One. Okay. So I'll go to...
Go ahead. Okay. Sir? What is the agreement with Key Assets and Nunavut to provide level 4 residential services, and how is that going?
Yes, Rick Healy. That's a unique agreement whereby it's a three-part agreement between the Inuit, Key Assets, and CYFS. And basically what it is that it's part capacity building, and it also recognizes that the rights of the basically being able to find housing on Inuit land. So if we go through our traditional processes of a request for a proposal, we'd basically be imposing that on this Aboriginal group. So what we've done, and we've worked with the Aboriginal group, and they have identified key assets as a partner that they want to work with. So what we did, we signed an agreement with Key Assets, the Inuit government, and CYFS to provide very similar services that we have on the province that's going to be provided in that particular area. And we're still working through it. We're still optimistic. I think we're on the cusp of developing some new placements there now, which we haven't had ever in this particular area. So people are very, very excited about it, and it's a unique opportunity to get that cooperation and coordination.
Great. So that's instead of pulling the kids out of the community. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
It was really exciting to be able to. They weren't part of the original RFP for staff residential placements.
Yeah.
And so this was an opportunity to develop something unique, specific for this particular population.
Great.
Okay, so Ms. Rogers, I've been lenient, and
you
I want to be
been,
fair.
You have, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
And I want to be fair, so we'll alternate back now. And Mr. Reed has a question.
I have just a query about social workers and the turnover in the positions. And I'm just wondering, in terms of throughout the province, are there certain areas, for example, Labrador, where you have a high turnover? And has any research or any sort of conclusions been drawn as to why the turnover rate is so high, particularly overall, but particularly in areas like Labrador?
No, it's Rochelle Cochran. We haven't done it specifically. We do have regular meetings with our regional management team in Labrador. Our turnover rate on the island is not a problem. We have maternity leaves because we have a young workforce. So on the island, our turnover rate is really related to maternity leaves or spousal transfer, things like that. So we don't have a turnover rate on the island, fairly stable, you know, for the age of our workforce. In Labrador, we have regular sessions with our management team, and they come forward all the time with ways to that can enhance recruitment. So we're doing, and our fly-in, fly-out policy is certainly working in that, which is we're quite happy with that. We would prefer to have full-time live-in social workers in community, but where that's not possible, our fly-in, fly-out has certainly done us a very big favor.
Again, Labrador and places like that.
Or yeah. It's for sure. It's really our recruitment is a Labrador issue, yeah. And the other things are natural recruitment challenges.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Braslow, did you have anything else on 2.1.01, or
nope,
shall we call
I'm good.
That? Ms. Rogers is good on 2.1.01. Shall 2.1.01 carry? All those in favor? All those against? Carried.
3.1.01.
Shall 3.1.01 carry? And we'll start the clock for Mr. Braslow.
Yeah, just a couple of quick questions there. Obviously, you know, increase on allowances and assistance, and it may have already been answered in the discussion here of some of the incentives and that for families as part of that, but give me just a little bit of a general idea of, you know, is it the standard across the board that we've up everything by 3 or 4 or 5%, or are there any new programs in there that there's some uptake on for the additional $2 million? I think it's a good investment.
Minister, it's just the increase in in-care, the level 4.
Okay. Fair enough.
Very expensive.
Is that budgeted on a percentage basis across the board, or is it based on the number of cases who are in level 4s?
Yeah, number of cases.
Okay. Good. Grants and subsidies up from what was budgeted, but down $1 million from the revised. The rationale for there? Is it uptake? Is it leveling itself out from what was originally budgeted? Is there a change in one of the categories?
Grants and subsidies, providing funding to the agencies to deliver the programs and services on behalf of the department, and we're providing grants to a number of organizations to provide direct services to clients or to provide support with the delivery of client services. So it's client support services that we're paying for here.
So it's based on number of cases at any given time and the severity or the input
of children, yeah.
Intervention that's necessary. Okay, fair mm-hmm. enough. Curious, the revenues, federal, from 13,544, the same as budgeted. I'm assuming that's a direct grant. The $18 million that came last year, what was the difference there?
So what actually happened here is we were spending more money provincially on the Aboriginal population. So we went to the federal government and negotiated, and they agreed to fill the gap and pay back the money that the province was using.
From previous owed amount, but it was a one-time shot.
No, they're going to work with us on a continuing basis.
For continuation?
That's okay. Right, yes, because we are spending a larger amount than the province has allocated.
Okay, great. Earlier, the discussion around site locations and reassessment, whether or not offices remain open and mm-hmm. how the service would be offered. When you start evaluating that process, do you include stakeholders like Foster Parents Association, the Social Work School, service groups that may be interested in providing or partnering services there before you make a decision that the ratio is not there to close an office?
Okay, I'll start. So the Minister, I just wanted to start this, and then I'm going to let Rochelle finish it. This evaluation started with the previous government, mm-hmm. so I just wanted to take note of that. Go ahead, Rochelle.
We do engage the Foster Family Association. We do have regular discussions with Diane Malloy. In terms of, she understands our caseload and our need to make sure we have the professional office structure upon which to make decisions on these children. She will work with us to help ensure that the family visitations that our foster families do, we find locations outside of, if it's not in our office, we will find other locations within the community upon which to make sure we have those visitations. So, yes, we do some consultation, but that's, it's happening usually with a group of people who are involved in our business. We don't do broad community consultations, anything to that respect, but just within our own community of practice.
Itself. Okay, no, Madam Chair, I'm good with all its subhead sections here, and 3.101, I'm good, and questions that the Minister and her staff have answered. I appreciate that. And right now, I don't have any other questions, so I'll pass it on to Ms. Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Brazza. Ms. Rogers.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The level four, so we're seeing an increase, A, in the number of kids coming into care, and then it appears an increase in the number of kids going to level four. Or is it just that level four is costing more?
When we say there's a number of kids coming into care, those kids go to multiple sources.
Yes.
Some go to kinship arrangements like a grandma.
Right. Yes.
We have another group that go to foster homes. So it's either a level one or level two foster homes.
Yes.
We have another group of children who need special services. They go to our level three foster homes, which is the pilot between key assets.
Yep.
And our department. We've done some really great work with Key Assets this year on having, for the first time, we broke that barrier in 5 years. So we've done some real good work for our high needs, children with high needs in level three. And then we have the 150, I think, around 150 to 200, and the numbers deviate. They change from time to time, who go into level four. So level four, if we can't find one, two, or three, we would move them into level four.
Yes, I understand that. So maybe I'm a little bit confused here, because when we look at 3.1.01, under allowances and assistance, an increase of $2 million, and I thought that was stated that that was an increase for level four. Is it? And I'm just wondering, is there an increase in the number of kids going into level four?
Increase in the number of kids going into level? No, I think we're fairly stable on that. I mean, it deviates. Again,
if
we can't
that.
Find a foster family, particularly our problem has been in the last year is with level three foster homes.
Yes.
We created this level system back 4 or 5 years ago, and we did some great work with the foster family associations on 1 and 2s, and again kin as well. That's a great resource for us, but we hadn't made any major gains on level 3 in 5 years, and those are hard to place. They are either sibling groups, and it makes a real challenge for finding capacity. Or it's they have special needs. So last year we entered into the agreement with the with Key Assets, and now that we've, I think we've placed 13 or 14 more children. Yep. 13 or 14 more children have been placed in level 3 this year than we've had done in the past.
And that's in level 3 foster homes.
Right.
So
it's a pilot.
What's the role that Key Assets is playing there?
Do you want to speak to that,
Rick? Yeah. So our... The level 3, when we developed the level system, level 1 and level 2 is our typical foster homes, and level 3, of course, is for our special needs and large sibling groups. The challenge with level 3 is that a lot of our children who we can't find a family for are very large sibling groups. And you can imagine if you have 3 or 4 children in a family, there's not many people in Newfoundland that's got a home with 3 or 4 bedrooms just sitting there waiting to take foster children. So it's not necessarily that, you know, there is a combination. Some are very challenging children, but a lot of times it's just the number of children, and they're just not there. So what Key Assets has done is they've helped us go out and find homes specifically for these large sibling groups. And that's where we've had success. We've had, I can't recall the numbers right now, but certainly a number of families who've taken like 3 children. And we haven't been successful in being able to identify and recruit a foster family. Or it would be very unusual for us to get a foster family that's available to take 3 children. Not many people have that. So what Key Assets done is they go out and they assist a family in either renting a house to accommodate these large sibling groups, and that's not in our current model. Mm-hmm. So this is a pilot, and so what we're trying to do, we're trying to think out of the box how, I mean, the goal is to get the children with a family. I mean, that's our ultimate goal. So what Key Assets has done is working with these families. If they have a house, that's great. If they not, perhaps they can assist in renting a house that can accommodate these large sibling groups. So that's been some of the big success from that group.
Great. Thank you very much. Youth who have signed youth services agreements, do we still have youth ending up in unsuitable boarding houses? How is that going?
It's Rochelle Cochran again. Our youth services program is relatively new. It's come in with the previous legislative amendments back in 2011. And when we do our review, the minister mentioned we were going to do a review this year. That is certainly one of the programs that is included, will be included in our discussion paper. So we haven't seen any change. We haven't been any change in our numbers in that program, but we are putting it out there when we do our ledge review, just to have a deeper discussion with community on how that's going.
And we'll look at where kids end up living and what their needs are. And what is the status of the Supporting Youth with Transitions pilot with Choices? Choices for Youth.
It's Rochelle Cochran. We are working with Choices. On a yearly basis. We've had that pilot now for several years. The numbers under that program, our take-up rate, we had initially hoped to have up to 100 children, youth. I wouldn't want to call them. Depends on your age. I call them youth, but they're actually youth. We were hoping to have up to 100 youth referred to that program. We haven't had as great of an uptake on that as we had hoped, and I think the number of youth maybe are in the range of 25 in that range. So that's why we're putting this under the ledge review and having a discussion about are we getting value for the money or what's going on with that program.
Okay. And are there any other initiatives to work with some of the youth and who are doing youth services agreements? There's the one with Choices. Anything else?
It's Rochelle again. We have our life skills coordinators outside of the Avalon. And again, we still haven't seen the take-up in that program as we had initially planned when we did the ledge review back in 2011. So collectively, that's why we've and it's in the, it's on the list to be reviewed in 16-17.
Okay, great. Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
Okay, was there any further questions on 3.1.01 from any of the committee members? No? Seeing no further questions, shall 3.1.01 carry? All those in favor? Those against, carry. Shall the totals carry? All those in favor? All those against, carry. Shall I report the estimates of child, youth, and family services carried without amendment? All those in favor? All those against, carried. Now I'll ask somebody. Minutes were circulated from the last estimates meeting, and we'll need someone to adopt the minutes from April 27th, Department of Justice and Public Safety. Mr. Reed, thank you. The next scheduled estimates meeting is, as I understand it now, 9 a.m. tomorrow in the chamber, and that will be labor relations. And right now, we did great with time. I'll ask for a motion to adjourn. So moved by Mr. Brazel. Thanks so much, everyone, for participating in estimates, and have a great day.